Welcome back to Joe Paterno in His Own Words. I'm Steve Jones. Great to have you with us. Today's show being brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and online at purdyinsurance.com. And, of course, as always, by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Let's discuss where we've been so far. Joe Paterno, in the first half of our show, talked about his days at Brooklyn Prep and growing up in Brooklyn, then eventually moving on to Brown, the influence of Father Birmingham on his life and also on his career. Going to Penn State, it was a difficult decision for him to go to Penn State. And then the difficult phone call he had to make to his parents to tell him that, you know what, I'm not going to be a lawyer. I think I'm going to be a football coach. And the silence on the other end of the phone. Eventually, by the way, Mom came around. Jim O'Hara giving him the value of advice to eventually leave the O'Hara nest after 11 years. And once he got out there, he found a co-ed named Susan Poland. And then, of course, there were the successful seasons. The crossroads, of course, at Miami, where he finally broke through with some young sophomores, going unbeaten in 31 straight games. But the frustration for Penn State of finishing second in the nation in 1968 to Ohio State, finishing second in the nation to Texas in 1969, despite 11-0 records each year. And then the ultimate frustration in 1973, where Penn State became the first ever 12-0 team, and they didn't finish second or third or fourth. They finished fifth. 12-0, but fifth. But along the way, they had a Heisman Trophy winner in John Cappelletti, who gave a speech for the ages at the Waldorf Astoria. Through all the trials and tribulations of getting so close with great records, Joe Paterno advocated a national championship playoff. He finally got his shot, not at a playoff, but at a national championship game. He had it right there in his hands. Penn State went through the 1978 season with Chuck Fusina at quarterback, 11-0. Incredible talent the Nittany Lions had that year. Bruce Clark and Matt Millen were just juniors at the time. And Penn State had its shot as the number one ranked team in the country to play for the title. The Nittany Lions were able to get that shot when they beat North Carolina State 19-10. Matt Sui returned a punt 45 yards for a touchdown to put the game away. And then the crowd at Beaver Stadium heard the announcement. Oklahoma, which had been number one, lost to Nebraska. For the first time ever, the Nittany Lions were ranked number one in the country. Then they beat Pitt, and that set up the showdown with Alabama. Bear Bryant, of course, had always coached against Penn State, and had coached well. He had only lost one time, a Liberty Bowl game in 1959 when Rip Engel was the head coach. It was all set in 79 to win it all for the first time.
Well, I think the biggest loss, the game that affected me most was the 78 Sugar Bowl game when we played Alabama for the national championship, and they stopped us on the goal line. And then we stopped them, and we had 12 guys on the field when they punted. And I always felt that and we would have the ball, and the kid shanked the ball. We would have the ball inside the 30-yard line with a chance to win the game. I always felt bad about that because we had never won a national championship up to 78. That team had lost one game prior to that. 77, we had lost to Kentucky in a regular season game, and we went down in 78. We were undefeated and played Alabama in one of the greatest football games, defensive football games ever played. If I took the tapes out of the Alabama-Penn State game in 78 in the Sugar Bowl, you would have saw some of the greatest defensive players ever played a game. And it was a tremendous football game. But I deprived the kids of playing, right, because we had 12 guys on the field. And the referees, the officials didn't know it. I knew it. And I'm yelling, get off the field, get off the field. And then all of a sudden the official sees me ranting and raving. He starts counting, 12 guys on the field, 15 yards, took us out of the ballgame. I think that was probably the biggest disappointment I ever had.
And the irony, of course, was that Penn State had beaten Kansas in the Orange Bowl when Kansas, on a two-point conversion, had 12 in the field. Because of the penalty, Bob Campbell then scored, and Penn State picked up the 15-14 win. 10 years later, it was flipped. It was Penn State with 12 in the field. And instead of the opportunity to beat Alabama and win the school's first-ever national title, they had lost. It put Joe Paterno at a professional crossroad.
Yeah, well, I almost quit. I went home and said I'm going to resign. And then I went to New York, and I walked around Brooklyn. I went back to my parish, and I was all set to quit.
But he didn't. In the end, a big influence was Sue Paterno. In 1979, Penn State came back and went 8-4. They dubbed 1980 to be a very important season for Penn State, and then the Lions bounced back and had a fine year. They won 10 games, and they beat Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl. In 81, the Nittany Lions were number one again, but injuries bogged them down late in the season, especially an injury to Kurt Warner. They lost at Miami on Halloween and then lost to Bear Bryant in Alabama. And then, of course, the Nittany Lions came into the 1982 season, and Joe Paterno changed everything up. A window of opportunity had opened. Joe had been known for great defense and running the football. This time he opened up everything, and he put the ball into the hands of star quarterback Todd Blackledge, and they dubbed it Air Paterno. Penn State came out firing touchdown passes all over the lot, including a memorable victory over Nebraska at home 27-24, where the Nittany Lions in the final minute 18 rallied to win it. Down the stretch, Penn State picked up big wins after a loss to Alabama. Penn State won their final six games, including victories over Notre Dame and Pitt. And then it was the 1983 Sugar Bowl. Back to New Orleans, where the goal line stand had happened. Back to New Orleans, where there were 12 men on the field. But this time around, against the Bulldogs of Georgia, a memorable night for the Nittany Lions and Fran Fischer.
Blackledge is going to pass. He's going deep down the left corner. Gertie's there. Touchdown! 3-2-1. Penn State National Champion!
You're absolutely the greatest fans. It was unbelievable to come home from Harrisburg last night and see the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people rewind a 90-mile parade. Kids in every town and fire engines and people who responded to the great job that these people did. And to see these many people, this group out there, 15,000 plus people out there who have come out to honor these guys and honor yourselves and honor a great institution, because when everything is said and done, we're number one, not only in football, we're number one in many, many things, because we are Penn State, and we are Penn State, and you're Penn State, and God bless you, thanks for coming out, and let's be number one, not only this year, but forever.
15,000 fans on the old main lawn listening to Joe Paterno on that January day after the Nittany Lions had won the national championship over Georgia 27-23. Joe then addressed the Board of Trustees. He told them that Penn State had everything in place to not only be just great in football, but great in every phase of the university. He backed it up by being a vice chairman of the largest fundraising campaign to date in Penn State's history. He personally has suggested that the university go after $250 million. That was staggering, because Penn State to that point had never received any more than $70 million in a single campaign. Because the number was so high, they decided to compromise. They settled on $200 million. When the campaign was over with, Penn State had raised $361 million, $111 million more than even the vice chairman, Joe Paterno, had asked for. Penn State in 1985 put together an outstanding season. They went to the Orange Bowl, where they played Oklahoma. Penn State jumped out to a 7-0 lead in the game. But then Oklahoma came back and beat the Nittany Lions. Then Penn State went to the 1986 season. Many felt that Miami was the best team in the country. The Nittany Lions went through the season with a 12-0 record. Miami, same thing. They went through the season undefeated. It was time for the showdown, a game that was so big that instead of playing it on January 1st in the Fiesta Bowl, they decided to move the game back one day, let it be a singular occasion on January 2nd in Tempe. Leading up to it, it was good cop versus bad cop. Penn State gets off the plane, jacket and tie, buttoned down, looking very professional for a college team, looking like they're arriving for a job interview, getting ready to work. We know that Miami arrived in fatigues. Then there was the infamous steak fry, where Jerome Brown got up and said, look, says the Japanese didn't break bread with the Americans before Pearl Harbor. John Bruno then got up, the Penn State punter. He looked over and he said, if I recall, eventually the Americans won the war. At that point, Miami stormed out of the room. But then it came time to play the game. Hard-hitting, physical. Penn State made big plays. They made Miami pay every time they went over the middle. John Schaefer scored on a touchdown run. Melvin Braxton scored for Miami. Eventually, though, the Canes led 10-7 late in the game. And then Shane Conlin picked off a pass and ran it back to the six-yard line. Two plays later, DJ Dozier was in the end zone, and Penn State had a 14-10 lead. Heisman Trophy winner Vinny Testaverde, who had suffered through a horrible night, suddenly put together a great drive in the waning 2 minutes of the game. He completed five consecutive passes to then set up the ultimate moment.
Back goes Testaverde, trying to win it. Throws into the end zone. It's intercepted again. Picked off by Pete Gustafopoulos. And Gustafopoulos has gift-wrapped the Penn State National Championship.
The national championship won by the Nittany Lions, the second for Penn State in five seasons. With it, of course, brought a trip to the White House for Penn State University's president, Dr. Bryce Jordan, Joe Paterno, and the Nittany Lion football team, and a meeting with President Ronald Reagan.
Now, before I finish, let me say a special congratulations to Coach Joe Paterno. My money, I think he's one of the greatest coaches ever in college sports. He's never forgotten that first and foremost, he's a teacher who's preparing his students, not just for the season, but for life.
Mr. President, I want to say, as Dr. Jordan has said, how pleased we are and how proud that you would invite us here to the White House. And I want to present you with something that I think maybe signifies what Penn State athletics are all about. And this is a jersey that you can wear when you're out there chopping wood and driving the horse a little bit. Okay? And there's a couple of things about this jersey I want you to notice. Number one, as far as we're concerned, you're number one. Number two, there are no stripes on this jersey. We're not very flashy at Penn State. We don't put anybody's name on the back because we're team players. All right? And we're conservative.
Joe Paterno admitted later he was very nervous before he made that speech and pulled it off with complete and absolute ease. But then again, that was Joe Paterno. Through 1986, Penn State was as successful as anyone in college football. No question about that. Down the road, though, there would be changes for Penn State, including a move from independence to a conference. But also along the way, there would be incredible milestones that were reached in the 90s and also in the 2000s.